Welcome to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, sitting in for April Baer. Congress has approved the massive relief package to aid Americans and businesses during the global COVID-19 pandemic. I recently spoke with Congressman Dan Kildee from his home in Flint Township. He was preparing to drive, not fly, back to the Capitol to vote. Here's our conversation. So you are living a life that is generally very jet set, and lawmakers have to fly in and out of D.C. very often. Are you used to driving back and forth? Is this kind of a new normal for you as well?
You know, I typically about twice a year I would make the drive just because logistics dictate it. Maybe I have to move something. But normally, you know, every week I'm on a flight either, you know, Sunday or Monday or Thursday or Friday. We are all on that same flight back and forth. And this is really unusual. It's very rare that I'm in the same location, let alone my own home, for that many days in a row. So this is really an unusual thing.
Your family is probably enjoying that, though.
Yeah, I mean, my kids are sort of scattered. They're all doing well. There is something nice about being at home. But, you know, it seemed as though the work would be easier, not traveling back and forth. But it's hard. We are on conference calls literally all day long of one form or another. And it's just more difficult to communicate when we don't have the normal informal communication that takes place in the hallway, in the office, on the floor of the house. None of that's happening.
So the working from home conundrum bleeds into the public sector as well.
It really does. Yeah. It really does.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the fallibility of sectors in our economy. It seems to me that as we've moved progressively towards a service-based economy and away from making things, that sort of makes workers particularly vulnerable, not just in the day-to-day life, but especially during something like a pandemic, where it's not about whether or not we can transition our work into what makes sense. For instance, retooling an auto plant to make ventilators, but rather having to socially distance from the thing that comes and consumes your product, whether it's doing hair or nails or if it's serving food. But that maybe this pandemic shows the weakness of that.
I think it does. I mean, I think many of us over the years have made the case that we need to reclaim our manufacturing legacy, that we can't essentially become a consumer-based economy, and that we offshore manufacturing. We always have sort of said, implied, that this is a national security problem. We always thought of that as coming in the form of some external military threat or
right.
Something of that nature.
A war, sure.
But now we can see that one of the problems we have is that we haven't been able to quickly turn and manufacture all the products that we need. I will say this. I've been impressed by the extent to which even large and very small businesses have been able to quickly re-engineer and retool their processes.
Sure. Distilleries making hand sanitizer,
yeah.
Et cetera.
The point being, though, we need to have a plan so that we have the capacity, not just to support an economy that is based on manufacturing, but to be able to retool that manufacturing base in a moment of need, such as the one we're going through right now.
Do you think that the urgency and severity of this pandemic will, you know, it's rewiring a lot of our brains to think about how often we're touching our faces, how often we're coming in contact with large groups of people, what it means to be social. You know, we're thinking about things we haven't otherwise thought about as a society in a very long time, if ever. Do you think that it also will rewire some of the thinking in Washington about what's important going forward and how to have debates about bolstering the United States, both practically and economically?
I hope it does. You know, the concern we always have is that we talk about the lessons that a tragedy or something as dramatic a tragedy as this will deliver. And then we look back and we sometimes question whether or not those lessons were learned at all. I think we have to make the point through this crisis that this could cause us to rethink the way we do things. I'll tell you the big one for me is that we are getting major legislation through the House and the Senate in a bipartisan fashion. You know, the fact that we can't find the same urgency to build 21st century infrastructure or to invest in 21st century cures or to do the other big things that we know we have to do, unless there's a crisis that is literally threatening our very way of life. If there is a big lesson for Washington, it's that we've proven that when push comes to shove and where our backs are against the wall, we can come together, even in the most divided era of my lifetime. If we can't figure out a way to carry that forward, it will have been an even greater tragedy than what we're experiencing.
You know, part of what we see in this package is, dare I use the word socialism, but there are socialist aspects to a community of sharing and the government giving money to people, whether they're individuals or large corporations or even small businesses right in the middle. Do you think that it could cause some shifting perspective around the role of government in the average American life?
I think it should have an effect on the way people think about government, because for about 40 years, there has been this steady drumbeat that government is the problem, that government, that everything government touches goes wrong. And so rather than arguing it on its merit, there's been this effect or this determination to demonize and minimize and really caricature government as not being able to solve big problems. That does not serve us well. We can have a decent argument about where the line should be drawn, where government should have its role, but I think it's been dangerous and I think very unhelpful to demonize what we do together through our government, through the institution that we all own and share. And when we come to a moment like this, where it's especially important that people can trust the government to make the right decisions and to provide them with accurate information, to have had those two principles threatened, that government can't be trusted and that never makes the right decisions, undermines our ability to respond to a moment like this. That's an important lesson. There's no way we can deal with a pandemic like this without really effective government intervention. And this is proving that. And I hope it's a lesson that sticks.
Would you see a movement or a push for something like universal basic income out of this if people are going to be given a check that says this is reasonable to give to just about everybody in this country for the pain and suffering and loss that you are going to go through no matter what through this pandemic? Here is $1,200 just to see you through the next month. Do you think that that could become a push to maybe create a program around something that is recurring, whether on a monthly basis, quarterly, or yearly?
I think it's a good question, and I think that debate will come up. There are two pieces of this. One is whether we should have a floor of decency below which we allow no American to ever fall, that the basic elements necessary for survival should never be threatened. I think there is going to be much broader agreement about that. What form that may take, I think, is a technical question, whether it's universal basic income, some like that, some don't. But there are other ways to deliver through the mechanisms of the safety net a basic level of floor of decency so that housing, food, water, the basic elements of survival are never in question. I agree with that. And this pandemic, like Katrina did in New Orleans in a way, rips the cover off just how many people in this country can't depend on the basic elements of survival. In the richest country in the world, at its richest moment, we should never let that be.
Representative Dan Kildee from Michigan's 5th District, thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope that your family stays well through all of it.
Thank you so much. You too.